Hi, I'm Femi Oke. You're watching the stream. Can you imagine? I know it must be really difficult to do this, but try and imagine what it would be like to wake up and you're not sure where you are. You do not know what day it is. You can't tell the time anymore. These are a few of the distressing symptoms of dementia. According to the World Health Organization, right now 55 million people are living with dementia. But by 2050, that number could go as high as 153 million. So today on the stream, we are looking at people living with dementia, their carers, their families, and the advances in care and treatment. We start with Faza Butongo.
One of the most common misunderstandings about Alzheimer's disease and dementia is that people often use the terms interchangeably, but there is a difference. Dementia is an umbrella term used to describe a variety of symptoms associated with abnormal changes to the brain. Symptoms can include personality changes or communication difficulties, whereas Alzheimer's disease is the most common type of dementia, contributing to roughly 60 to 70% of cases. In this disease, high levels of misfolded protein first start to aggregate in a brain region called the hippocampus. This region is known as the center for learning and memory, hence why memory loss is one of the earliest symptoms of Alzheimer's disease.
We have such an amazing panel. So glad that they're here. Sivana, Andrew and Karen. You can ask them anything you want to ask them. But first of all, I'm going to get them to introduce themselves to you, tell them their connection with Alzheimer's. So, Sivana, welcome. Please introduce yourself to our audience.
Hi, Femi. I'm Dr. Suvarna Aladi. I'm a professor of neurology at the National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences in a city called Bangalore from India. I coordinate a service for people living with dementia and for their caregivers, and some research on how we can actually prevent or reduce the risk of developing dementia and improve care.
So good to have you. Welcome, Andrew. Tell everybody who you are, what you do.
Yes, Andrew Budson. I'm the Chief of Cognitive Behavioral Neurology at the Veterans Affairs Boston Healthcare System. I'm also a professor of neurology at the Boston University School of Medicine, and I've been doing research and caring for people with Alzheimer's disease and related dementia for the last 25 years.
So good to have you. And Karen, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself.
Thanks so much, Femi. I'm Karen Barakowitz. I founded an organization called Dementia South Africa, and I had a mom who was diagnosed at the age of 62 and passed away at 83. So she lived with dementia for Alzheimer's disease for 21 years.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Femi.
I'm a social activist.
Yes.
In for making dementia a healthcare priority in South Africa.
Sure. Viewers, you know who I am, but you probably don't know that I have a very close family relative who is currently living with Alzheimer's and vascular dementia. I have so many questions for our expert panelists. I'm sure you have too. One of the most difficult things is just to talk about it. If you want to talk about it, you want to share your experiences, you've got questions to ask, this is the 30 minutes to do it in. YouTube comment section is right here for you to jump into. Yes, first of all, let me just show you this graph. I did mention the rise in people living with dementia. So I picked the three countries that you are based in. United States, by 2050, 100% more people living with dementia. In India, by the same time period, 197% more people living with dementia. South Africa, 181% more people living with dementia. We're going to have to get so much better at dealing with dementia. It's going to be everyday life. Is this, Sivana, I am just thinking, this has got to be, we are living longer, the chances of you having a cognitive disease into your 80s gets more and more likely. Is this basically what is happening?
Absolutely, Femi. The numbers, as you have just shown us, are so alarming. When I was a student training in neurology, it was so unusual to find a person living with dementia. And in the 70s, the life expectancy for Indians was just 50 years. Ooh. Now the chances of living up to 70 are so high. We are rapidly aging. And as you know, age is the most important risk factor for dementia. So every day in the clinic, we have so many people coming trying to seek help for people living with dementia, neighbors, family members. It's really a problem that is affecting everybody across class, society, region, gender. Yes, you're seeing so much of it.
So, Andrew, the whole team who've been working on this show are now understanding the risk factors of dementia, and our lifestyle is going to change immediately. But can you mention some of those risk factors? Because there are areas of dementia that we can be prepared for. It doesn't just have to happen to us, does it?
Absolutely. The World Health Organization has estimated that perhaps as much as 40% of dementia can be prevented if people implement lifestyle changes such as exercising regularly, and particularly aerobic exercise, at least 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, and eating a healthy diet. This is usually described as the Mediterranean menu of foods, but I think many regions around the world have similar types of diets that includes fish, olive oil, avocados, fruits and vegetables, nuts and beans, whole grains, and poultry.
But Andrew, why? Why would that help your brain stay healthy?
Well, that is a very good question that I'm not sure anyone knows.
Nobody exactly knows the answer to.
What okay. is it
yeah.
about those foods? But I will say, I think that those are foods that help people to stay healthy. It's good for the other organs in the body, including the heart. And those are foods that also help us to maintain a healthy body weight. I know at least in our country, in the United States, there's an epidemic of obesity, but if you eat those foods I just mentioned, you're going to be less likely to become overweight.
Karen, you are often in situations where you are working with people with dementia. You have a lot of experience, those case stories. What happens the first moment when you realize that either you or a relative or a loved one or a friend is showing symptoms of cognitive impairment? How do you know that? What would you look for?
So for me, that's a very good question. And you know, that's usually the question which is overlooked by family members, because they usually say, when they do see behavioral changes or cognitive changes in a loved one, they usually always try and protect it, particularly if it's a spouse. And it usually is that they, try and avoid that question don't really look for what it really is in terms of a diagnosis or an assessment. And one must point out that any kind of memory problem at any age is not normal. And it could be something that is a reversible disease, which I'm sure Andrew Silvano could definitely elaborate on.
Sure. Andrew, go ahead.
Sure. One common cause of memory loss that's reversible are vitamin deficiencies. And vitamin B12 is one vitamin that we now know can cause a dementia if people don't take enough of it. So it's one of the tests that we always screen for. Another very common test that we screen for are thyroid disorders. Those can also cause a syndrome that looks just like dementia. So absolutely, there's reversible causes that your doctor can screen for.
Silvana, you very kindly shared a clip with us, which was really of a family member noticing that there'd been changes in a family member, and he didn't realize that it was dementia. He was kind of learning that situation and then what to do about it. So this was a video that was really an educational, an awareness video. It comes from India. I want to share it with you. Then Silvana, can you come off the back of it? Because those early days are very difficult. Let's have a look.
In fact, I did not know anything about dementia, but the way in which she was behaving, not responding to various things, it was a little not comfortable with me. So I said, what to do now? And moreover, slowly she was losing her other activities like going to bathroom, sleeping, and all those things. So that has made me much more troublesome, and I don't know how to deal with that.
Savannah, go ahead.
So, Fanny, this is such a common situation that we see even today. In the clinic, I would see people coming back to me with the same story, that they really didn't understand the symptoms. They did not know why their loved one was behaving this way. Why were they not able to recognize their closest family members? Mm. Why were they not able to, you know, dress themselves, feed themselves, recognize common objects? And I think the lack of awareness that this is a brain disorder was something that was so common when we started off about 20, 30 years ago. But even now, people really don't know that these are common symptoms of dementia. There's an element of stigma as well. So there's a tendency to kind of deny that it's a disease, and, you know, they just go deeper and deeper into the state of helplessness. And when they talk to others about it, there is no help coming. So the person living with dementia and their carer kind of get isolated, and they live with the symptoms, they face the consequences all by themselves. And this is such a common problem, causing a lot of damage that, in fact, can actually be helped if they just came to us early. You could just educate the carer, help the person living with dementia, and so much of these of this trauma could have actually been prevented.
Yeah, I do think we need to work to destigmatize the disease. I saw a patient in clinic yesterday who told me he was so embarrassed about his memory troubles. And I sometimes hear this from families. And we need to make society around the world understand that it's a medical problem. There's nothing to be embarrassed at. Mm-hmm. Nobody's embarrassed if they have high blood pressure or high cholesterol. Yeah. You shouldn't be embarrassed if you have memory loss. You should do something about it and try to improve things.
Karen, go ahead.
Yeah. I agree with you there, Andrew and Savannah. So I think that one of the biggest challenges is fear, because really the fear is really there. What will I become? What will I be if I can't take care of myself? How will my family cope, et cetera, et cetera? So there's a number of those things. In South Africa, we have a very particular type of challenge, and that is the stigma around the cultural issues. So, you know, amongst many of our indigenous population, it's regarded as the person being possessed by their ancestors, or that they are bewitched, and particularly women are the ones that are targeted most likely.
I want to just pick up on that. I just want to pick up on that idea of fear, because something that I've seen in my family is that if you're having issues with remembering, there are things that are then happening in the house, you don't remember them, so somebody is coming in and doing them. Somebody is coming in and moving the towel. Somebody is coming in and making the floor wet, because you have no memory of that happening. So the fear of being the person who has dementia, and you're surrounded by these awful things that are happening to you, that is also really, really scary. We spoke earlier to a writer called Steve Silberman, and he reminded me that there's a way to look at dementia where you think about what it is possible to do rather than what you can't do. And Steve brought this up. Here he is.
My mom had me when she was a teenager, so we've always been like friends, as well as like mother and son. She taught me how to read, and now I'm a writer whose work is read worldwide. I owe that to her. Now she has dementia, so sometimes it's hard for her to find the right words, but her wit and brilliance still shines through, as the other day when I said to her that she seemed happier than she had seemed a couple of hours before, and she said, "Well, you know, I'm living in a very unstable universe. Thank you, Mom."
That is something we haven't talked about enough, which is wit, humor. If you don't laugh, you're going to be doing an awful lot of crying. Let's talk about what is possible in terms of care and advances. Karen, will you help us with care from a South African perspective? What is out there? What is possible? What can you do as a community even?
Well, you know, from what we in Dementia SA have experienced is we still, at the time of the pandemic, wanted to remain relevant. And many of the doctors and memory clinics and assessment places, hospitals, et cetera, weren't open and available to people for any kind of assessment or diagnosis. And so we did a number of webinars, and we started a WhatsApp support group, and we met every, and we still do now, nearly 2.5 years later, meet every Thursday between 1 and 2 on a Thursday on Zoom. And that has become a lifeline for many, many carers who are at various stages of in the care of their loved one. So you would have somebody that's just been diagnosed or somebody that is, you know, much further down the line. And, you know, it's that information, it's that lived experience, that understanding of their good days, their bad days. And, you know, how do we handle these situations? That's very encouraging, I think, for many caregivers and families.
I'd love to ask you, Savannah, this question. It's something that we shared with our audience online. So on Twitter, we said the number of people living with dementia is expected to nearly triple by 2050. What do you think is needed to provide better treatment and support for people with dementia and their families? Of course, that's a different answer for different regions, different parts of the world, different families even. But Savannah, what do we need to do better?
I think we just need a very dementia-friendly dementia environment. We need everyone to be sensitive to dementia. The most important is, of course, the policymakers. We need the WHO Global Action Plan for Dementia to come into every country, but we also need for society to be sensitive to the needs of people and their families. We need to have parks friendly. We need to have workspaces friendly. We need to have homes friendly, environmental design friendly. We need people to understand what people are going through. So when a person with dementia walks on the road, he just feels supported by everybody around him. So policy and a dementia-friendly environment and healthcare systems really and social care systems to really up their game to prepare for taking care of people living with dementia.
All right. I have got YouTube questions. Andrew, you've got answers as well. You go first, Andrew, then I'll pepper you with some questions from YouTube. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to add that the other thing that I've been working on that I feel is so important is that we need to educate everyone about this disorder so that they'll know and be empowered with how to care for these individuals and care for themselves. So I've written one book for clinicians, one for the individual themselves who has memory loss, and one book for the families. And I think that with education, people will do better.
Sure. Karen, what were you about to say? Go ahead. Karen, go ahead.
So, you know, I absolutely agree with Andrew and Savannah, because I think that it is really that understanding of destigmatization, of awareness, education, that really does put dementia as a priority, you know, as a healthcare priority. I think, you know, social care, the availability of awareness clinics and assessment clinics, and, you know, it has to happen, you know, on a number of different levels. So as Andrea's mentioned, you know, clinicians and those in terms of the families, that it's not a communicable disease, that you can't catch it. You know, it's just a matter of fact. It happens. Mm. And, you know, let's see how best we can deal with it as a family.
Oh, you can't and, you catch know, the let, family. Let me ask this to you. You can't catch it, but if you have somebody in your family who has dementia, are you then going to have dementia?
Well, you are at it.
Andrew, you go first. Karen, you go second.
I'm sorry. Okay, yes, you are at slightly higher risk if you have a family member with the disease, it depends a little bit on which family member it is.
Right.
But in general, your risk is considered to increase twofold to fourfold with a family member with the disease.
Karen, agreed? Should we move on?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, okay. You know, somebody like myself, for instance, when my mother was 62, mm-hmm. relatively young, and it's also the age of onset and diagnosis, that also plays quite a significant role in it. You know, you live in fear. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, with the modifications of diet and exercise, et cetera, and lifestyle choices, you know, what's good for the heart is good for the brain. And that's exactly the adage that we all need to adopt.
Karen, when I lose the keys, I'm just like, I've got Alzheimer's today. I'm totally convinced that I have inherited it from a family member and I'm doomed. And then I go and do some yoga and drink lots of water and hope that that will fix it. I have got so many questions and concerns from our audience. Let me share them with you very quickly so you can get as many as possible. Carl says, if a loved one presents symptoms, how do you start talking about it with them in an empathetic way? Savannah, do you want to have a go with this one?
Yes, I think that's the first step. So when your loved one is losing their keys, or they've forgotten what you have told them or forgotten what they had for breakfast, you first have to reassure them that it's all right and that you have to tell them, so this is what you had for breakfast. Mm-hmm. So this is what you did yesterday. Yeah. Yes, it might be a memory problem. It can be helped. Let's go meet the doctor. But don't worry, I'm there for you and we'll support you through all the... I'll be your memory.
Okay.
We'll all be your memory. So we'll get you through this. So I think reassuring a person, not denying their symptoms,
sure.
but reassuring them and telling them you'll be there and you'll make life easier for them.
I love that.
And then that you should go meet a doctor and things will get, you can get help.
That's really helpful. Shula asked this on YouTube. Let me give this to you, Andrew. As a healthcare provider, Shula says, something I've noticed is combative or aggressive behaviours in seniors with dementia. What do you attribute that to?
A lot of it is simply that the individual with dementia is confused, as you brought up at the beginning of the broadcast, and they don't understand what's going on. And usually doing things with a calm voice, with good facial expression, good body language, that's all calming, and you simply explain to them everything is all right, and let's take a look at some of your old pictures, or let's have a cup of tea, or do another activity that will distract them from whatever is confusing them and help them feel more comfortable.
So this is really interesting. We're in the last minute of the show, so I'm going to ask you for instant response here. Shortsey says, if we know more about what is bringing this on, dementia, cognitive issues, and we can at least begin to avoid these things and help stop that huge rise in the numbers of people living with dementia. So if there was one thing that you would say, Karen, Andrew, Savannah, maybe it's some new tech or an ability to care better, or maybe it's you, your caregiver should be your family members, what is it that you would say to our audience that will really help them if they're living with dementia, or if maybe they will do later or down the line? Karen, this is a one-line thought. Go ahead.
So I think that, you know, for us, it would be, you know, be accepting, be more understanding,
okay.
Learn about the disease.
All right, learn about the disease. We've been doing that today. Andrew, go ahead. Your one thought.
Engage in aerobic exercise. It's the best thing for patients, families, caregivers.
I'm so exercising, Andrew. I'm so scared. All right. Thank you so much. And Savannah, your one-line thought to wrap us up.
Engage with people. Mm. Talk to people. Learn new things. Do your favorite activities. And keep going. And you can actually keep going.
Savannah, Andrew, Karen, thank you so much for your expertise. Thank you for your questions and your comments from our YouTube audience as well. I will see you next time. Take care, everybody.